is absurd. That should not be the conversation, humanitarian aid. The conversation be the liberation and dismantling of the apartheid state, and of course dismantling the concentration camp so people are free. That should be the only thing we talk about. That should be what we fight for. That should be the demand, because that's the only thing that's going to end it. Another truck here, another truck there, so that people will, you know, have this sense of false hope for a week or a few days. It only makes things worse.
Welcome to Let's Just Talk. I'm your host, Hami. Joining us today is Miko Peled, a human rights activist, speaker, and the author of The General's Son, Born in Israel. And there's so many things for us to discuss today. First of all, thank you for joining me, Miko.
Sure.
I want to start with Israel's explicitly stated, Netanyahu's explicitly stated plans to take over the Gaza Strip, to occupy it, ethnically cleanse it, and expand the genocide.
כל שטחי רצועת עזה יהיו בשליטה ביטחונית של ישראל והחמאס יוכרע כליל.
I want to begin by getting a reflection on that before diving into some of the other questions that we have prepared for you today.
Sure. So, well, first of all, thanks for having me. Like I said to you earlier, we're here at Palestine House of Freedom in Washington, which is a relatively new organization that that we founded, I'm the director. I run it. And so, you know, the occupation, expansion, ethnic cleansing, genocide, this has been, you know, this has been the Zionist agenda from the very, very beginning. So Netanyahu or any other prime minister or any other politician that says one thing or another about this is not new.
Right.
It's barely news. And I've been saying for a very long time, unfortunately, I've been right that this is what it's going to look like unless the international community and people of conscience step up and stop the state of Israel from continuing its genocidal agenda.
Right.
So they said they were going to do this. They're going to do this. They're doing this. We've seen this horrific reality in the Gaza Strip and in other places, or I should say the Gaza concentration camp and other places in Palestine for, you know, on a heightened genocide, I would say, for the past 18 months or so.
Right.
And so this is to be expected. I don't think there's any surprise that this is happening.
Mm. You know, like, definitely not a surprise for anyone who's been paying attention. I'm surprised when I see people surprised at the things
right.
that are coming out now. So I just wanted to get your reflection on that.
Right.
But you mentioned that, you know, in the beginning, you were mentioning that you international organizations, this is what's going to happen and things are going to keep getting worse if they don't intervene. I'd like to get your reflection on the failure of the international community in doing anything about the current genocide. The UN itself just reported that 14,000 babies could die in the coming days if aid is not let into Gaza. What are your thoughts on the way in which the international community has been responding to this?
Well, if by international community you mean Europe and the U.S., then there's really, again, there's nothing to be surprised about. Historically, Europeans and Americans didn't really care when people of color were being massacred by white people. Mm. I mean, I hate to make it sound so, you know, simplistic, but I don't think there's any news here. Again, this is something that's been part of the history going back for a very long time, and they never cared, and there's no reason why they should care.
Yeah.
You know, World War II ended in 1945, the Holocaust came to a stop, the genocide of Jews and so many others stopped, you know, by the Nazis, and 3 years later, they allowed the beginning of the genocide of the Palestinian people to commence by the Zionist movement.
Mm-hmm.
And then we know that the same French commanders who fought against the Nazis then became commanders and went to Algeria and massacred people in Algeria.
Mm.
So this is what happens in this world, you know, generally speaking, governments of in what's called the West don't
right.
care when people of color are killed.
Mm-hmm.
On top of that, you know, or I should say on top of that, but the good, you know, if there's a positive to this, is that popular opinion is shifting and pushing these governments to care, not to care at least, but at least to act. We've not yet been successful in getting governments to act. As we know, this is still, you know, there's still very broad support by the different governments around the world for this, for the ongoing genocide of the Palestinian people. But there is, you know, there's popular support for Palestine and for the Palestinian cause for liberation. It is growing. And hopefully it'll get to a point where the governments have no choice but to act. That's really the only hope, is that we push so hard that the governments have no choice but to act. But we're not there yet, sadly.
And you know, when I first met you, I was telling you this before we started recording. It was at a Let Gaza Live march that we were covering, and in Washington, D.C. And that was the day before Netanyahu came to the White House, and Donald Trump announced his plans for the Riviera of Gaza. Things have gotten progressively worse since then. One interesting thing that happened is someone came up to you and they were like, "Where are you from?" And you said, "Palestine." And then you've also often described yourself as Israeli-born, liberated Palestinian. Could you tell us a little bit about that, and what that means to you? And also, on that same lens, you've mentioned Zionism a couple of times. How do you react when people describe themselves as like a liberal Zionist or a Zionist, but don't support the current genocide? Can you be as, you know, for many of us, Zionism is what's happening to Palestinians on a daily basis, the lived reality of Zionism that is, I mean, of Palestinians that is Zionism. But what is your reaction to that these days, 19 months into what's been happening?
Well, I'll start with the second part. Zionism is Zionism. There's no such thing as kind, liberal, friendly, peaceful Zionism. Zionism is a genocidal, racist ideology that has a history of over 100 years in Palestine, and we've seen what they've done. So you know, we've seen what Zionism has done. It commenced the genocide of the Palestinian people. It established an apartheid state. A brutal, violent apartheid state, and has been engaged in ethnic cleansing. So this is Zionism. What does it mean to be a liberal Zionist? I don't know. Zionism is Zionism. If you're willing to associate yourself with that ideology, you know, what do you mean, genocide by kinder means? Do you mean genocide slower? I mean, what does that even mean? And so it's a lot of nonsense. Anybody who supports or associates himself with this is. It's like saying I'm a liberal white supremacist. I mean, I don't know what that means. Does that even make sense? It's absurd. These are all kinds of absurd ideas and descriptions of people who do not necessarily want to admit that they support this, or that want to pretend that there is a kinder, gentler form of Zionism that could be possible or was once possible. But anybody who is minimally informed about what has been taking place in Palestine over the last 100 years can see that that's nonsense, because it doesn't matter. Zionists of all throughout of the entire political spectrum of Zionism have governed the apartheid state, and they've all acted the exact same way. They've all been heavily, deeply engaged in the genocide, the ethnic cleansing, and the apartheid state. In terms of my own, you know, personal identity, I was born in Palestine. I think that the fact that Palestine has been taken over by Zionists, has been occupied, that an apartheid regime has been put in place, shouldn't, you know, should not be legitimized. And so if we call the country by the name that they gave it, which is Israel, then we're legitimizing that. The country was Palestine until May 15th, 1948, and it was Palestine for, you know, for thousands of years. Suddenly, one day, these occupiers come and colonizers, occupiers come and change the name. That doesn't legitimize it. So I was born in Palestine. I was born in Jerusalem in Palestine, and that's just the way it is. And again, I think it's important to talk about the country and use the name that has been used, like I said, for thousands of years, and the name that the people of Palestine, not the settlers, but the actual people of Palestine, the indigenous people of Palestine use, which is Palestine, which is Palestinian.
Right.
So that's why people ask me, and yes, on some of my social media, in my profile, I describe myself as an Israeli who was liberated by Palestinians. But I it's it's I mean I mean it. I mean it in all seriousness. That is actually the reality.
How so? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, I was born and raised born into and raised by a very Zionist family. I have a grandfather who was a major Zionist leader leading up to the establishment of the apartheid state. He was a signer of the Israeli Declaration of Independence. And then my father was a general, and I have other family members of my extended family who held important positions. So Zionism was not something I learned about from a college course or a book. In my every day at the dinner table, my entire existence, family gatherings, and so on, it was all about Zionism. Eventually, I embarked, later, I should say, in my life, I embarked on a journey that I describe in my book, In the General Sun, as a journey of an Israeli in Palestine. And throughout that journey, I realized that I was actually born in Palestine, albeit I was raised in a settler community that is completely segregated from the Palestinians. And my ability to take that journey of an Israeli into Palestine and make these realizations and realize that I was actually born in Palestine and learn about the reality and learn about the history and so forth of Palestine was thanks to the Palestinians that I met. In the process of that process is a liberating process. In other words, the process I went through from being this very patriotic Zionist to where I am today is liberation. I liberated myself from this very racist ideology, and it was thanks to Palestinians who, number one, allowed me to very, very graciously and very kind of patiently allow me to go through the process, because it's not easy and it's not fast. It takes time and it's excruciating. But I was liberated thanks to them, and it is it, when you go through the process of from racism to where I am today, to inclusion, I suppose, is it's a liberating process. So that's why I say that.
One of your work that you do is towards one single democratic state where all people have the same God-given rights. Wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your work, the sign is behind you, and you know what that means to you today, in the midst of everything that's happening.
So, well, the sign behind me says Dar al-Hurriya, which means the House of Freedom, or Palestine. This is Palestine House of Freedom. So this is the Arabic name. And there's this, I guess, accepted wisdom, I should say, about Palestine, that there is this possibility of what's known as of a separation, of like a two-state solution, where there's Palestine is divided into a Jewish state and a Palestinian state. The reality is that Palestine has always been a single state, or at least for a very long time, it has been a single state, albeit the Palestinians within it have been divided, have been fragmented, politically, bureaucratically, geographically. So this I this these two areas that are known as the Gaza Strip and the West Bank, they were created by the settlers, by the occupiers. These are not historically separate areas. Somebody sat down, the Zionists sat down, the apartheid government, and they drew them and they said, okay, these two areas are going to be separate. And then that's how that is all the way to this day. But really, it's Palestine is an entire country, and since 1967, it's all been governed by the State of Israel. And then the State of Israel made sure that there will never be any Palestinian state, certainly not in those areas. So the reality we are facing is a single state over all of Palestine that's an apartheid state. That's what we have. And the apartheid state created this reality. So the options are not a one state or two state, like some people like to frame it. The options are a one Palestine, which is an apartheid state occupied by the Zionists and run by the apartheid Zionist state, or bringing that apartheid state down and replacing it with a free democratic Palestine with equal rights. And that's, I believe, the only reasonable solution. It's the only solution that provides a hopeful, optimistic future. It's the only solution that anybody who believes in human rights and democracy and justice, it's the only solution that's possible. So those are the two options, apartheid and racism and violence, or peace and democracy and stability and so forth. So I, for one, obviously, believe in a single democracy with equal right and a free Palestine with equal rights.
And then I want to shift gears a little bit, right? This has been making headway, but the media and how they've been covering the last 19 months, Western media in particular, and you have people like Piers Morgan, who all of a sudden is getting these accolades for changing his mind about everything that's happening, like over the past 19 months, when he's been the most ardent supporter of the atrocities that have been taking place. What do you make of the way in which the media has chosen, the media apparatus, corporate media that is, has chosen to cover what's happening? And how do you react to people who are now, I guess, changing their mind, pulling a 180, coming back around? I guess that's good to some degree, but I just want to get your reaction to that.
The difference between the two sides is not a political one. It's not a religious one. It's one of values. So if and you know, it's funny because in the US, if they talk about other countries that have state-controlled media, but the media here and the state on this issue in particular are lockstep. I mean, they are they you know, there's no dissent whatsoever expressed, and that is full support for the genocide of the Palestinian people. Now, I've always said that it's a question of values. If you believe that it's okay to bomb a hospital and hurt a child because maybe there is, I don't know, the devil or somebody is in the basement of the hospital, or God knows whatever the name of the latest devil. They changed the name of the devil sometime. One time it was terrorists, one time it was this, one time now it's whatever. But if you believe it's okay to harm the child or bomb a hospital because whatever that evil entity exists there, then that's one set of values. I do not believe, even if the devil exists there, that it's okay to harm even the hair on the head of a child. Nothing can possibly justify bombing a hospital. Nothing can possibly justify hurting a child. It's values. If somebody believes that it's okay, I don't even know what to say. I mean, I don't know. There's no room here for conversation or argument. Now, why somebody one day would think it's okay and then the next day wake up and say, well, actually, you know what? It's not so much okay. Well, all right. Well, they made the realization. I'm glad. Welcome to the right side of the issue. And that's all I can say about that. I don't know what could possibly has motivated people to support the genocide over the last 19 months, over the last 80 years, over the, you know, I mean, I don't know
You're not in their
why.
heads.
Huh?
You're not in their heads. Well, I want to talk about the movement, right? Like, it's no surprise you've been seeing the repression that takes place from the university grounds to where am I in New York City in the streets with the NYPD. And so, I want to get your thoughts on what you think the direction the movement should be taking, in order to achieve some sort of tangible goals for the people on the ground? Because as you mentioned, change will occur when change occurs when there is enough pressure put on those in power. And then conversely, I also want to get your advice that you have for people who are engaged, young people in particular, who are engaging in this movement. It's no secret that, like, even us speaking about this somehow makes you a target in if you live in these United States of America. Throughout your journey, how have you navigated these waters, you know, and what advice do you have for young people who are coming up, some who want to be brave, but because of their own personal circumstances, can't afford to jump the picket line, maybe?
Well, what we've seen on campuses is the very definition of courage and humanity, without any doubt. In fact, we just screened the movie Encampments here a few days ago, and then we had a panel here with Guy Pritzker, who was the film who filmed it, and then a local activist in the, on the in a local encampment here in Washington, and I visited the encampments, when they were when they first were coming up, and I mean, I don't know that we've ever seen such an incredible display of courage and humanity. I mean, it was incredible. So I'm the last person that can give advice to the kind of people that were able to put that together, because it was, and I mean, the word incredible is the only way to describe it. It was the most beautiful display of humanity and courage and determination and solidarity. And they did not budge. They did not budge on their ideology, on their beliefs, on their demands, because they know that these are the right demands. They know that this is the right ideology. It's more than an ideology, like I said, it's values, and they would not compromise their values. Again, I stand in awe of these people and what was done, and they're still doing it. It's not over. I mean, they're paying a heavy price. A very heavy price, and they continue, and they know they're going to continue to paying a price, and still they continue. I mean, this is the very definition of courage, and so this is what we have, and as my Palestinian, brothers and sisters in Palestine always say, when you stand up, you expect to pay a price. And I think it's very interesting that the Palestinians who stand up are punished severely, in the worst possible way. The students here in this country who stood up are punished severely and penalized in the worst possible way for someone who lives in this country and has got the privileges, but still. And these are two groups of people who are standing for justice, for freedom, for equality, for peace, and they are the ones being punished. So this is the way things are. And again, like you and I just both agreed on, it's going to require a lot more work by a lot more people to end this. And I think if I was to suggest one or two things to those of us that are in this, and I've been saying this for a long time, we need to stop asking for small things. For somehow, when we talk about Palestine, the bar is set so low that people always ask for the bare minimum. And then from time to time, we get it. But then, of course, shortly after that, things become much worse. Like there was a ceasefire for a short period of time. And then, of course, things became so much worse right after that. And we knew it was going to happen because they said they were going to come back and bomb some more. And so, of course, they did. People fight over getting humanitarian aid, 5 trucks or 10 trucks. That is not the problem. During World War II, there were concentration camps, and the concentration camps needed liberation. Yes, they needed food and medicine and water and aid, but aid was not going to do it. They needed to be liberated because the resources are abundant. Abundant resources exist outside of the camps, right? Same thing with Gaza. Gaza is a concentration camp. It's a concentration camp that's been in existence for since the 1950s. It needs to be liberated. There are plenty of resources just outside the concentration camp. All they need to do is they need to have the freedom to go and access the resources, the water, the food, the medicine, and so on. So it's not about getting the genocidal regime to allow humanitarian aid to go into a population that they want to kill anyway, and allowing that population to starve or die of dehydration is much cheaper than bombing them. Is absurd. That should not be the conversation, humanitarian aid. The conversation be the liberation and dismantling of the apartheid state, and of course dismantling the concentration camp so people are free. That should be the only thing we talk about. That should be what we fight for. That should be the demand, because that's the only thing that's going to end it. Another truck here, another truck there, so that people will, have this sense of false hope for a week or a few days. It only makes things worse, and it also allows the other side to manipulate, manipulate the people that they're starving. So I think that's really the key thing that needs to happen. I think the demands need to be streamlined, and we need to be focused on liberation, 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 dismantling the apartheid state, allowing for a real free Palestine to emerge, dismantling the concentration camps and the ghettos in which Palestinians exist, allowing the refugees to return. These are the demands. And this is nothing new. In other words, Palestinians, going back decades upon decades, have been demanding exactly this. It's just that it's been dumbed down by the Zionist noise, and now we just need to bring it back up.
Miko, thank you so much for joining me on Let's Just Talk. It was a pleasure hearing your insights, and we look forward to doing this again.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Of course.